It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, do not adjust your audio. This is what my voice sounds like. As retribution for having been kicked off the show, my wife gave me her cold. So there's going to be a lot of coughing, probably some sniffling. But it's fine because by the time you're seeing this, I will have come back from my vacation and can just be sick and deal with it. It's not as if, in actuality, tomorrow I'm going to be on airplanes for over 10 hours. So, I took a test. It's not COVID.
Well, that's good.
She had also taken a test when she got it. So, and for her, it was just like a couple days of feeling under the weather. But that's because she doesn't have my knack for getting maximum sick at all times. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Just copying me there, trying to pretend you're sick. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magic Talking Hat Podcast, only podcast is this podcast.
Bless you.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 687.
Which we had difficulty figuring out because we are front loading this so heavily.
Yeah.
This will technically air the day after we get back from our vacation, but we're gonna get back at such weird ass time. Like, our plane leaves Hawaii at 9 p.m. Tuesday Hawaii time, so we don't get back until kind of late Wednesday. So I was like, I don't want to risk it trying to figure it out later, so here we are. If you're just joining us for the first time, I don't usually sound like this. He sounds like that. Oh, that's normal. We have a hat. It's magic. The magical talking hat at gmail.com is its email, which is the sole thing that makes it magic. Because whoever heard of a hat having an email address?
Just this one, as far as I know.
Just this one. People write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want, and the hat magically makes us talk about it. Who has two thumbs and is doing this gesture too much already this episode? This guy.
That guy.
So yeah, why don't you write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com and make us talk about things? Anyway, how's your weekend been? Because I only saw you like 2 days ago.
Well, I actually have had a cold for the last couple weeks myself. Feels like it's getting better. I hope it is, because there were a couple of clients I couldn't see last week because of it. Because I see him in person, and I asked, well, we could do a remote or something, but I don't want to get you guys sick, so tell me what you want to do. And they said, oh, we'll just, it's okay, we'll wait, you know.
Some people do not like the telehealth experience.
I'm not a fan of it myself, but most of the people I see is that way. I mean, I don't hate it, obviously, and it's better than a person not getting help at all, of course. But I'd much sooner meet someone in person, much sooner do that. And I really look forward to working with the clients, those few clients I do meet in person. But, sometimes this is just how it works. And the people that I see in telehealth, a few of them are like, I mean, they're far away. We couldn't meet in person. That wouldn't be practical. But you do miss a lot in the telehealth situation. You miss a lot of little cues and little, I don't know. And if the interaction starts to get pretty heavy or fraught or something, it's harder to, cope with in telehealth than it is in person. You can pass them a box of tissue or something, right? If you're in person, you can, I don't know, there are small gestures and things you can do to help provide some comfort or some a response, but telehealth, that's harder. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of it, but most of my clients are telehealth, and that's probably how it's going to be, unfortunately. I mean, I don't, not unfortunately that way. I just mean for my own personal preferences. But that's how it is. And it's better than not getting any help at all, for sure, for sure. Now, you kind of liked telehealth at first, if I recall.
I'm fine with it. I have a very slight preference for in person, and I would say that is more about me being active and getting dressed and going out and stuff like that. I think that's good for me to make the effort. But that's mostly what it is. I do fine on there, but I don't know. Telepresence in general has always felt very normal and natural to me. And I mean, it probably again has to do with sort of growing up online in a lot of ways, which I did.
Well, as a client, also, I prefer to be in person. I wouldn't, as my therapist, we've never really ever entertained doing telehealth for any reason, and I can't imagine doing it that way, honestly, but
We do it now if one of us is sick, but not so sick that we can't still talk.
right.
Or I think once or twice my schedule has been so slammed that I'm like, can we do it this way? Because my therapist is across town, so it's not exactly quick.
Oh, sure.
But that I think that's only happened once or twice. We're almost always in person.
Well, a lot of my clients, it's also a very much a convenience thing. It's like you just said, they've got a lot going on in their schedule. It's just a lot more convenient to do it that way. Another frustration is technical issues. I've experienced with clients some technical issues, and that can be so hard to get
And
the work done when that's
that
happening.
sucks. Yeah, no, that is that just sucks.
But like I said, I think a lot of people are getting therapy who weren't before, which is so good. I mean, that's such a good thing that, it's hard to
But
be
the
down about
downside, they're getting it with you.
it. Come on. Come on. Oh.
Right. I have a podcast recommendation for you and also for our listeners for different reasons. I don't like it. I wanted to like it. I tried to like it. I don't like it. But I think you'll like it, and I think they'll like it.
Okay.
There's a podcast called Doctor Game Show. And if you look it up, it's just DR. It's not spelled out doctor. That messed up when I was trying to find it. It is a podcast hosted by a gentleman I never heard of named Manolo Moreno and a woman named Jo Firestone, who
Oh,
is
yeah, I know
one
who
of
that is.
William's celebrity crushes, along with Kate Mulgrew and a third person. Joe Firestone is hilarious. I love her. She's a great comedian.
Yeah,
She's an
really funny.
even better writer. She's done writing on a ton of shows. She's, I believe, currently the head writer on After Midnight, the new reboot of At Midnight with Taylor Tomlinson that I really enjoy. But her stand-up is also really good. She was one of the main writers and one of the main characters on Joe Parra Talks With You. She's wonderful. And I was very excited for this podcast. The premise is listeners write in with games that they have invented. And Joe and Manolo every time have a celebrity guest, and that guest plays the game along with call-in listeners live. And it's just various different kinds of games. The example they used to have in their commercials was a game of is it Pokemon or medication? They tell you a name and you had to guess if it was a Pokemon or a prescription medication. I've had ones where they would tell you the English translation of a foreign title for a movie, and you had to guess what the American title for the movie was. Because sometimes countries sort of change the title into weird ways and all sorts of different games. They're on the Max Fun Network now. This is apparently their third try. They got canceled twice before, as Joe says, once for money and once for content. But I am listening at the very beginning, and I know they've had success because there's like 150 some episodes on Max Fun for it. And I don't like it. I tried. I really did. I don't like it.
What don't you like about
It's just a mess. They don't edit because apparently they can't. They don't know what's going on so much of the time. It's constantly falling apart. People call in and they can't hear them or what. Like, it's just a mess. And like, that's the fun, I guess. But I just get so sick of it so fast. I think you would like it because you love her. And I think people who listen to this podcast would like it because I think it's bad in the same way this podcast is bad. I wouldn't listen to this podcast. I don't, and I wouldn't. Because we're so unstructured and at the whims of our limited technical knowledge. But y'all find it compelling, so you might find this as well. And Joe Firestone's a wonderful person. I wish her all the success in the world. And Manolo Moreno seems pretty cool from what I heard from the 1.5 episodes I listened to. So check out Dr. Game Show if you're not me. I'm trying to find some more podcasts because my brother, and me, I'm all caught up and there's only one a week. I was listening to Adventure Zone. I'm a little. It got heavy in a way that wasn't good for my mental health, so I'm trying to find other podcasts. And I listen to Off Menu, but I'm trying to find others. So we'll see. I've downloaded like the first three episodes of several different podcasts for the trip, so we'll see how that goes.
Cool.
Goodness. Okay. So I've seen some movies since we last spoke. Seen three movies since we last spoke.
Wow.
I guess I see them every night. Yesterday I watched The Innkeepers by Ty West. It's the movie he made right after House of the Devil. And I need to stop watching Ty West movies.
Like what other type of movies?
Well, his big thing right now is he did a movie called X and then a prequel to it called Pearl. And now there's
Oh.
another one coming out called Maxine.
Yeah.
But House of the Devil was his big, like, that was what sort of brought him to light on people. It's horror movies.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of them, but I do know the reputation.
I've seen a few now, and they're very popular. I mean, they're very
Yeah.
well received.
Popular, yeah.
Don't like them.
Not your thing, huh?
No, I don't find them scary. I don't find them particularly coherent. He films well, but the dialogue often doesn't work, and it's yeah, the it's I think it's they're meant to be atmospheric more than about the narrative, and I don't go for that. And yeah, now I've seen three of them.
What makes them popular, do you think?
There are so many different reasons why people watch horror movies. It's hard to say. I mean, I still get caught up in the fact that some people watch horror movies for the creative kills. And while I appreciate that for a certain degree, that would not be a reason I would watch a horror movie.
Yeah, me
I'm a
neither.
big lore hound. I want a weird story, or I want it to be scary.
Right.
And Ty West movies might be scary if you were in the theater. They're not scary to me. I don't know. He gets pretty big names in him. Jenna Ortega was in X. Tom Noonan was in House of the Devil. He gets some good people, but yeah, I think I just need to stop watching his stuff. Although there's a found footage movie he did about a cult called The Sacrament, and I am kind of curious about that because I love cult movies and found footage movies, so we'll have to see. But also, and this one's going to be a weird one, we watched the 1980 George C. Scott led psychological supernatural thriller The Changeling.
I don't think I've seen that.
It is considered something of a classic, and it has come highly recommended by a variety of people.
What'd you think?
Don't get it. I don't get it. It's very, like, I don't get it. It wasn't scary. It wasn't. Like, there was sort of mystery to it, but like the mystery is solved halfway through the movie, and that's it. It wasn't at all scary to me. It's very technically filmed well. It again, the editing is really bonkers. Like, you really stick with a scene just long enough for the information you need, and then you have jumped to another scene like
No.
all the time. I looked up some of the old things. Roger Ebert said, like, if technique was enough to make a movie a good horror movie, then this would be a good horror movie, and I agree, but it's just not scary. The main character is fairly rational and reasonable the whole time, so it's just. It just happened, things happen, and it's fine. It was not a bad way to kill some time, but it wasn't scary. It wasn't particularly interesting.
Roger Ebert thought the technique was good, though. That's interesting.
It's nicely filmed and everything. But it is considered like a big classic, and I'm just like, And then I saw Wonka.
I didn't know you were going to see that.
I didn't really either know I was gonna see that. It wasn't
Oh,
really my idea.
whose idea was it?
My wife, she kind of wanted to see it.
Oh,
To be
she.
fair, it is possible we got high and watched it.
Oh, conceivable that happened.
It does seem like a movie that would be good for that.
Yeah, well, Probably all of the Willy Wonka movies would be good for
Right?
that. That's what I'm
Right?
thinking. Not that I would know, but.
Although I think you're the only person to see all three of the other ones, all three of them, so man. You're the only
Really?
person who saw the Johnny Depp one. Nobody else saw that movie.
I didn't think it was that bad, actually.
I know. And nobody can gainsay your opinion because nobody else saw it.
Okay.
I didn't hate it. Trish enjoyed it quite a lot.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah,
Good.
she found it quite delightful.
Oh, all right.
And I can understand how someone would feel that way.
You can.
I can. I am able to understand that as a concept. Here's what I will say. Bless his heart, I don't think Chalamet was a great acting choice, a great casting choice for it.
I don't think so either.
Now, keeping in
It
mind,
baffles me,
this
actually.
is a very different character. This is some Cruella de Vil shit. The character of Willy Wonka in this movie starts as a very different person and ends up as a very. There's no way this movie carries on into Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in the same
Right.
way that there's no way Cruella de Vil's movie carries on into the version we know of 101 Dalmatians. Like,
Right.
they definitely is a different creature, but I do not think he was a great casting choice for it. It wasn't terrible, but I didn't buy
I didn't either. So what do you think
it.
motivated that? Like, why did they cast him, do
He's
you
a hot
think?
property right now. Who knows?
Okay.
Maybe he's a fan of the material, whatever. Hollywood, man, it's Chinatown. Also, as I think has come up, it's a musical. It's like a full musical. It's not like one of those stealth ones where they got one or two songs. It is a full musical.
Right.
And the songs are functional. It
Yes.
is some of the most dull, straightforward musical numbers ever.
Yeah, not feature film worthy, in my opinion.
No. You know how every musical has like that one song that was like fine, but nobody ever really cares? Like every song in this movie is that song.
Did it feel like a production made for like high school production? It felt like that to me.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
That was exactly the thing. The whole time I'm like, this feels like something a high school is putting on.
Yeah. Like, but more to the point, made for a high school to put on. Like, it wasn't even ever, it wasn't made by someone who thought it would be on Broadway. It was made by
Yeah,
someone who
no.
thought only high schools were going to play this.
It feels like that, yes. Which brings me to my biggest point, which is it is for children. Like children, children, not teens. Because every single thing that happens in the movie, every motivation, every action, every plot point only works as a children's story. The moment you look at it with just slightly older eyes, it all becomes really horrific, really scandalous and uncomfortable, and like everything only works if you view it as like a kid's story. Because the moment you spend more than 2 seconds thinking about any part of it, it is creepy as fuck. But kid's stories can be like that. Fairy tales can be like that. And in that light, I think it does it well. But you have to come at it as if you're a kid. That being said, the secondary, the Deuteronomist character in this is named Noodle. And she and Willy Wonka have a big musical number together that really felt romantic to me. And that made me very uncomfortable because I have no idea the ages of the actor, but Noodle is coded as a child, and Willie is coded as a young adult. And maybe to other people it didn't feel that way. It very much felt sort of like a romantic, like a whole new world analog.
Yeah, I
And I'm
mean,
like, that's not, I'm like, he's too old for that, but he's too young for it to be like a parental vibe. Neither of them, yeah.
No, I
So
felt that
I
way
was
too. I
really
mean,
creeped out by that
I got the
scene.
impression that the movie wanted you to think it was platonic and all that other stuff. I think clearly that's what they wanted, but like you, I thought you guys
I
aren't
don't think
hitting
the
that
song
tone
works
here,
for
and
it.
it's weird. It's really weird.
But if you can set that aside, and if you can handle incredibly mediocre songs, and you can look at it as a child would look at it, it's pretty fun. It's pretty cute. It's pretty funny. It's got a lot going on for it. You just really have to, your perspective has to be just right, or else it's not going to work.
Do you have an idea of who you would have cast? Because I can't figure that one out myself. I know it's not Timothée Chalamet, but I don't know quite who it would be.
I've given it zero thought, so I'm just going to say James Acaster. I don't think he's that good an actor, but he's got the vibe. I buy him as a young Willy Wonka more than Chalamet. And in real life, he's an absolute sweet tooth freak, so. And he's one of those tall, lanky motherfuckers.
I mean, the problem with the whole casting question is I don't, so I'm not a big fan of Dahl's work in the first place.
Oh yeah. Same,
But
same,
what I
same,
do
same.
know, I mean, the limited knowledge I have, not just from other material, but from reading a little bit of it myself, is that it'd be very hard to. I don't feel like his stories have a strong sense of characterization in them, as far as, you know, like, I don't think, I don't personally think, I've actually had quite a bit of exposure to the original Charlie the Chocolate Factory story. And I didn't get a sense that any. That his work was really worked hard to develop a character, right? Like, if you're an actor and you read the original story thinking, all right, I'm going to figure out this character, you're going to find that there's not a lot. I mean, you have to basically bring your own stuff to it, just like Johnny Depp did,
Well,
right?
and he
And
doesn't have a lot of depth. It's like asking, who would you cast to be a young Anakin Skywalker? Who would you cast to be a young Boba Fett? Like, we didn't need young versions of this. Those are characters that we want to know at their current age. Like, so maybe there is no good answer.
so then if you don't if the source material doesn't give you very much to go on in terms of, well, what's this character like in the creator's eyes, because there's not a lot there, then you kind of fall back on the first person to play that character, which I thought Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka was actually interesting and compelling and fun to watch. Well, you can't just impersonate Gene Wilder's portrayal of it.
No,
I
also,
don't.
there's nobody out today who you'd be like, that's like a young Gene Wilder.
Yeah, right.
Except James Acaster is the closest I can think of. I'm not saying he's that close. I just can't think of another one.
Yeah, I don't
No,
know.
the answer is you cast no one because you don't make this movie.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Also, I don't. I don't know what Hugh Grant's doing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
what was up with that? That was weird.
I don't. I mean, and supposedly he hated the experience. Not like the people or anything, but apparently the mocap used was insane and confusing to him. But like, why?
Yeah, that is weird. That whole thing was weird.
The Oompa Loompas are weird. On a base concept,
Well,
It's a weird thing that we keep propagating.
yeah. It's almost a reason you wouldn't do it, right? Like you're sitting here thinking, let's do this project. And then when you get to how the Oompa Loompa thing's going to work, you might go, you know what? This just isn't workable. Let's forget about this. Right?
This is my favorite thing, and I said this right after it was over. So, I mean, I guess minor spoilers for Wonka, but he grows up to be really Wonka, whatever. There's only one Oompa Loompa in this.
Yeah.
And it turns out he's been tracking Willy to get vengeance for things. But anyway, in the end, they're like friends, and he hires the Oompa Loompa to be his chocolate taster. And that's going to be his deal. So, if this Willy Wonka grows up to be that Willy Wonka, one of two things has to happen. One, he breeds that Oompa Loompa like a fucking horse stud. Or two, at some point in their friendship, he's like, so you got any relatives back home who like want to labor intensely? Not you, obviously, but do you have like any relatives you don't really like that could come and be my factory workforce? Give me a third alternative. One of these two things is happening.
Well, I mean, the implication has been, you know, in some telling of the story is that the Oompa Loompas want, they like doing this work and they want to, and it's, you
Yeah.
know,
I've
that's
heard
you.
that argument in a lot of situations.
A lot of situations.
Yeah. Roald Dahl did not invent that argument.
Right. I'm just saying.
Also, if that was true, it's interesting that the one Oompa Loompa we meet here isn't like that.
No, he doesn't seem interested in that at all, does he?
No,
No.
no. Go figure.
I don't know.
Yeah, so it's a pretty fucking weird movie. But and I don't I mean it's got a lot of wonky shit, no pun intended. The accents are all over the place. And I don't. Are we still doing fat suits?
I don't know, I
Why are we
guess.
still doing fat suits?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't love that. Again, it's sort of a kid thing, maybe. And I mean, in this point, it is arguably a plot point. The guy ate so much chocolate that he got fat, I guess.
Yeah.
We could have
Right,
left him
but
not in a fat suit and just made a joke about how he had diabetes now.
well, or he there didn't have to there didn't necessarily have to be any kind of attempt to make it humorous what the implication. I mean, he could just, I mean, what, they didn't have to, you know, they didn't have to do that at all,
Oh, yeah.
right? He was basically bribed by chocolate, we get that. And then why did there have to be any kind of visual or any kind of consequence that we're supposed to think is funny about that?
Fun fact though, one of the other cops, like the nice cop, I guess, for lack of a better term in it, is the guy who does the audiobooks for the Rivers of London series that I've read that we've talked about on this podcast before. So that was kind of fun to see what he looked like.
Maybe he could have had
Olivia
dental.
Colman.
Maybe he could have dental problems or something instead of gaining weight. I don't know.
Olivia
Rewind.
Colman does a remarkable job, clearly wishing she had had a chance to play Mrs. Leavitt in Sweeney Todd. Like,
Oh yeah, she did a good job.
yeah, I mean, she chewed the shit out of the scenery for it, but
Yeah,
yeah.
another example of a really good actor putting a performance in something that wasn't really worthy of it.
People keep paying Rich Fulcher to show up in things. Here he is. I do not like Rich Fulcher, but he's frequently in things with people I do like.
Oh.
So it happens a lot. Yeah, that's all I gotta say about the Wonkas. They're a weird family. I don't associate with them. I believe we have exactly one email, so lay it
Oh,
on me.
okay. It's from Azure
Cool.
Talon.
Azure Talon. He's the Talon you'd love to Azure.
To whom it may
But you
concern,
mustn't
he
Azure.
says, I'm currently running Marvel Multiverse RPG. My
Oh my.
condolences. My condolences, Azure Talon. AKA D616. And my group all decided to play variants of existing characters. My wife is playing with us, and she's playing a Gamora that escaped to Earth solo and worked as a thief and assassin before her face turn. Problem
I
is,
didn't like that.
this is a heroic system, and she loves killing. Decapitating specifically. Okay, well. I've gone ahead and removed the default heroic tag that let her gain karma. This game's Benny's. It's karma, I guess, for simply existing, but I don't know if I should go further in applying consequences for this behavior. She's only killing, I don't understand what he's saying here, goons and supervillains, and seems to be having fun with it, so I've let it slide. Also, it's not disruptive to the party, so. Or should I guide her towards more heroics or just let her have fun her way? Azure Talon, who was less specific in this greeting. So the upshot is he's got a it's a heroic it's a game where you're supposed to be playing a heroic character, and he's got a player who's doing non-heroic things. And so far, those non-heroic, I guess, decapitations are happening to bad guys. Which seems to be okay, whatever, but he's wondering if this is bending or breaking the game and if he should do something about it.
Well, this is unfortunate.
Why?
Because it's a very simple answer and not enough to fill the rest of the episode, but I'll do my best. If it's not disrupting the game, who the fuck cares? If she's enjoying what she's doing and nobody else is having a problem with what she's doing, leave it alone. That's rule number one.
Rule number one.
Or possibly rule zero, depending on when you look. But yeah, if nobody has a problem with it, except you feel like the game wasn't meant to be that way, unless you have a problem with it, who the hell cares?
Well, what if the person running the game does have a problem with it? Like, this isn't what, this isn't the way I want this to
Well,
go.
this becomes a th th this is a jumping off point for something we can potentially talk about.
Okay.
I think it is very, very important when you are starting a new campaign to discuss what kind of campaign it's going to be. We did that in the D&D game we're doing right now. And there's a lot of aspects to this, but the general one is what kind of characters are these? Are these heroes? Are these anti-heroes? Are these villains? Are these lunatics, murder hobos? How realistic do we want the drama? How dark do we want to get or not get with the superheroes? Do you want it four color, the kind of shit William likes? Or do you want some dark Frank Miller bullshit in here or Mark Millar or whatever? Or do you want it just goofy? Like it's all over the place. We, in our D&D game, in terms of the level of drama and seriousness, have voted and made it Scooby-Doo level. So it is
Okay.
very light, very prone to silly rather than actually dark, stuff like that. This kind of prep is very important. I have had games where I knew how the campaign was going to go. And so I would say things like, I need you guys to have naturally curious characters. I need you to have characters who want to be adventuring. Because if you make one of those characters that's like, I just got thrown into the situation and I really just want to go back home to my normal, boring life, this campaign will not work for that kind of character. Valid kind of character, but it won't work here. I also tried with less good effect to tell them all to be criminals who had been cryogenically frozen as a prison sentence. And my group at the time had a hard time with that because some of them really did not like playing bad people, even if it was former bad people. I believe out of the four players, the criminals, one accidentally did something bad, one did something bad depending on your perspective, one just was attached to a family that did bad things, and one was an actual killer for hire. So yeah, not a lot of actual criminality going on there. This is also a very good point at the beginning to talk about things you're not okay with. To set a list of things, what do you not want in the storyline? Sexual violence, politics, gore, clowns. These are all things that have been marked as no-goes in campaigns I have either played or run. It's very important at the beginning to specify what is the shit you do not want to deal with. And I think that would have been a perfect time if you wanted to say, I want this to be a heroic game. You guys need to be heroes.
And define
And
what that
then,
means exactly. Like,
yeah,
well, it means you don't do this, you do that.
and then you'd go to your wife and you'd be like, I don't, you don't feel very heroic. Can we come up with something to, sort of put your character up against something that changes their perspective on that, or can we just sort of slowly alter it, or do we need to do a different character or what? But again, at this point, it only matters if somebody's experience is being lessened by this.
Okay.
If the issue is just, I don't think that's how the creators of the game intended for this to go, who the hell cares? They're not here.
Well, give me an example of what it would look like if you're running a game like this and this kind of thing is happening. What kinds of things would indicate to you that, and you have the attitude like, well, this is fine if that's what the person wants to do. I don't care what the creator intended, blah, blah, blah. But what would kinds of things would you see that would tell you, okay, this is actually being disruptive. Other people don't like, they're not saying so, but they don't like it. Or if this is causing complications for me as the person running it. It doesn't really fit with what everybody else is doing. Like I said, nobody's complaining, but you as the person running the game can see that it's not working. What kinds of things would you
I
be
mean,
looking
it's
for?
frequently a momentum issue.
Okay, what do
We're
you mean
going
by that?
along, things are happening. You do something that makes everyone in the room go, "What?" I have had this experience in games, and usually, because I'm an asshole, I'm not quiet about it. I'm like, "That's really how you think." That's the heroic thing here. That's how you think your character would handle this. I have called people out on their character motivations. Again, because I'm an asshole, but it doesn't mean I wasn't right. And actually, I try not to do that anymore. I feel like a dick whenever I do, but I have in the past. But I mean, that's the thing. You can, if you can't tell, it's probably not a problem.
So, but like, let's say there's a situation and you've got four people playing, and three of the people who are trying to be heroic are trying to solve a problem in a very particular, maybe, like you said, four color heroic way. And the other person, kind of says, well, I'm gonna I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to chop that person's head off, and then I'm going to do this. And it's very different from what the other three characters are doing.
Yeah.
And maybe they won't complain. Maybe they'll go along with it. But would you, as the person running the game, think, I don't, this is not working. I can't, these other three players can't be having as much fun as this one player is.
So Spider-Man does that thing where he strings someone up by web from a long distance and makes little pithy comments until they tell him what he wants to know. He's not like Batman, who makes it look like he's actually going to drop you.
Kill him, yeah.
But Spider-Man's like, oh, I don't know. You better figure it out. My web's getting slippery or whatever. And then they
Yeah,
say, or whatever. And that's all great. And then the guy next to you is like, yeah, I'm going to shoot him in the head once he's told us the
right.
information.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
As a GM, depending on the group and depending on the severity, I may do the following.
Okay.
I may say, whoa, time out. I think that is going to have very serious implications on the dynamic of this group and may take this game in some wild new directions that you may or may not want. Are you sure? And frequently at that point, if the room is dead silent, then maybe I'm off base. Maybe they're fine with it. If it goes the way I expect it does, other Spider-Man, for one, is going to be like, yeah, dude, I don't know that I can be team members with the guy if he
Yeah,
does that.
sure. Yeah, that I was expecting that kind of thing would come up.
And if for whatever, but if for whatever reason we don't go back and they want to do it, I'm like, okay, hey, Spider-Man and other Spider-Man and third Spider-Man, because I don't want to come up with different characters right now. Your friend and teammate, Gunny McStab's hole, just shot, this homeless guy that you just were pumping for information in the head and killed him. What do you do? And if you're incredibly lucky, aka this never happens, it starts a whole weird new tense storyline. But almost always, it results in okay, Shooty McStab's hole. What character do you want to play now? Because that dude is dead or been run off and is now a new villain that I'm probably going to need to control, unless you want to have sessions separately and not play with these guys, which I guess is an option, but it seems to defeat the purpose. So probably he needs to become an NPC now and you need to come up with somebody new.
Interesting. So there's consequences. There's
Yeah.
consequences to someone doing that.
The time this most often comes up is in people that haven't played a lot of role-playing games. Because everybody's free to play their character, which means everybody else is free to say, fuck your character. He's awful or whatever. And it gets more complicated if the character is just a jerk. It's less complicated if the character shoots people in the head for no reason. Sort of like in real life. Imagine you had a friend and they were kind of a jerk. Shut up. And that could be awkward in your relationship. And that could provide a strain and make certain situations difficult. Imagine you had a friend and sometimes he just shot people in the head for no good reason. I'm not saying that's better, much worse, in fact, but in terms of your relationship dynamic, it's pretty straightforward what you do next.
Yeah, pretty straightforward, right?
It's not like we have to have a talk. So it sounds like in this instance, it's all very much sort of bad guys doing it, and it sounds like the players don't care. Do the characters care?
Yeah,
And if
do the
that's not
characters
the
get it?
case, then whatever. I mean, then he's like, yeah, that's our, this is our wild card. You better watch out, or we'll send Gamora after you. And she likes taking off heads. But yeah, if it's what Azure Talon's email makes it sound like he thinks this is sort of counter to the way the system is.
Yeah, it does sound like that.
To me, that's not a problem in and of itself.
Right.
Is this causing some sort of problem? Even if it's just with you personally, Azure Talon, then you need to address it and see how you can work with it. And there are ways. The MCU just comes up with a lot of faceless CG alien monsters that nobody cares if you cut their heads off. Nazis, zombies, these things. Fine. You also could come up with something that really humanizes some of these people and or puts alternate Gamora in a situation where she is treated in a way she doesn't like because of this tendency. But anyway, something that puts in front of her, you know, as fun as it might be, decapitating people is gonna go bad for you. Or decapitating people means more than you thought it did because now you got to know one of these guys or whatever. Like, you can find ways to do that. I would work that out very much with your wife beforehand. If this is the thing, say this could be a problem. Let's brainstorm some ways to make it work. But if nobody has a problem with it, nobody has a problem with it.
Okay.
Yep.
I thought that was very interesting.
Is an interesting concept to come up with, and one I've run into a lot. The original version, the classic version, is one of the players has made a character who is what we call the angry loner. And it's like, yeah, cool. This is a game where you're supposed to be hanging out in a group. So, how's that going to work? It's like the traditional D&D thing is all your characters meet at an inn and somebody hires you for a job. If you make a character whose dearest dream is to work at an inn, it's probably not going to go well because they're going to show up and apply to serve drinks and then they're out of the story.
Yeah.
So, and this is the thing I've talked with many times with people when they're starting, like, here's the kind of game we're going to run. So make a character that would work in that kind of game and think about it. Don't just make a character because it could turn out, oh, this is a terrible choice for this kind of game.
Yeah, I mean, there have been times where, I've been playing and I come up with a character that I very quickly realize, oh, that was a mistake. Like the whole reluctant, it's a pretty typical trope, and in the hero's journey, it's super typical where the hero's reluctant, right? Kind of a call to adventurers, and they sort of resist and all that. So, I just had that in my head, or a couple times I played, I had that in my head, and I started kind of doing that, and realized no, this doesn't work for what we're doing here. It puts too much on the other players to do the work to get me to into this thing where that's not their job, and that's not the person running the game's job. It was my job as the character creator to come up with something that worked, and I didn't. And so
Unless that's the story.
unless that's the story, but it
It's
never,
the
almost never
same thing.
was.
You can play
It's
a
never was.
jackass in a group who doesn't get along with everybody else. And that's fine if everybody involved agrees that that's going to be a fun thing to play with.
Sure. Yeah.
But it will have to be like a big aspect of it.
Well, see, I run into that too, where one time I was supposed to be kind of a trickster character, which did unpredictable things. I looking back, I thought all of the things that the character did contributed to the story and whatnot. But for the players, this was a very unpredictable kind of the thing to deal with, right? It wasn't. There wasn't a lot of There wasn't a lot of synergy there, right? It almost made the character somewhat of an outsider, just interjecting chaos into the thing all the time. And I realized with that character too, I thought, okay, if I was writing a book or a short story or comic book or a play, if this would be fine. But as in terms of a game, and especially in terms of this game, no, this probably doesn't work.
Well, yeah, because in a book or short story or whatever, either your character would be a minor character who only is there tangentially, or would be the main character and we'd be following them. In a game where these four people are all supposed to be equal main
Like an
characters,
ensemble, yeah.
then it becomes a problem. But you can also make it to do really cool things. I ran a vampire game one time where all the characters were basically the heads of the different clans in the city. And what that meant is they did a lot of things together, but we also had a lot of time in between where they would do their own things because they were in leadership positions essentially. So in between sessions, there was a lot of them doing stuff, and then I would get them together for certain occasions, parties and things like that. And what that allowed me to do is I made one of them the main villain. Because he was around and engaging and everything, but he had so much time by himself to do all the shit that made it all terrible for them that they didn't see it coming. And that was real fun. And you couldn't do that in a game where they're really a band of people going along together. So there's lots of things, but y'all just got to get on the same page as quick as you can. And if you've already started and you're not on the same page, then you find ways in the story to get there. In the case of your trickster character, you find a way to get them to start caring about the people, and that becomes more of a motivation than just being a chaos junkie. And that can be a really cool plot point and character growth and things. And maybe Azure Talon's wife learns to appreciate the value of keeping heads on bodies. I don't
Well, and it speaks to, I mean, this is something I struggled with as I was doing, role-playing stuff was, I've done all lots of kinds of storytelling throughout my entire life, and I've learned, like when I did improvisational acting and sketch writing in high school, and when I, written short stories and novels, character creation is different. We've talked about how every mode of storytelling kind of has its own rules. Character development and every mode of storytelling sort of has its own rules, and you can't just. So when I went into role playing, I didn't know how to create characters in role playing. I knew how to create characters in just about every mode, other mode. And I tried character creation from those perspectives, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. Well, it pretty much never worked 100%. And so I had to learn, okay, how do you do it in this? And I think I figured it out more or less, but yeah, all I could do is what I knew how to do. And there was, I had several modes that I'd learned up until that point, and I called on all of them, and they all were a little bit off compared to role playing, because it's just that much different than character development in every other mode, as far as I could observe.
And I don't know that everybody operates this way, but I think that's the surest way to do it is to, as a group, figure out the kind of game you want.
Yeah,
And
right.
then if you all agree on the kind of game, and the kind of game doesn't have to be everybody plays the same kind of character,
Right.
but the general sense of it, what we're going towards, what style it is, what tone it is. Then, as long as everybody's enjoying it, rules, balance, all of that shit, who the hell cares? I'm gonna go now and do so many things to pack and keep going for tomorrow.
Okay.
Write us themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. Also, a lot of you are gamers. Get on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and tell us your take on this. I had some pretty hot takes about role playing here, and William was also involved. So tell us your thoughts on it. Email us more stuff. Next time I will probably just talk a lot about how it was in Hawaii. But by the time you see this, I'm already back, so you can't break into my house. Ha ha.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.